Now, HomePods Destroy.
Hello, and thank you for downloading HomePods Destroy. I'm Terry DeFellin. If you're listening for the first time, then this is a Star Trek discussion podcast that focuses predominantly on the original series from the 1960s. In this episode, we will be discussing the original series character Yeoman Janice Rand, a short-lived but much-loved member of the Enterprise crew. The episodes in which Janice appears are 50 years old, but you may encounter some spoilers through our discussion. Also, we may end up discussing some of the personal problems and issues of the actor who played Janice, Grace Lee Whitney. So some degree of parental discretion is advised.
Hey, Janice, is that for me?
Don't you wish it was?
How about that?
Yeah, how'd you like to have her as your own personal yeoman?
Where are you, Sulu?
In here feeding the weavers, Janice.
Well, I've got your tray.
May the great bird of the galaxy bless your planet.
Thank you. Hello, Beauregard. How are you today, darling?
Her name's Gertrude.
No, it's a he plant. A girl can tell.
Why do people have to call inanimate objects she? Like, she's a fast ship.
He is not an inanimate object. He's so animate he makes me nervous. In fact, I keep expecting one of these plants of yours to grab me.
Hello and welcome to HomePods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I'm Terry DeFellin and I'm joined by Graham Sibley.
Hello.
And by Derek Mantle.
Hello.
Chaps, it seems like ages since we were last here.
It does, doesn't it?
It seems like it.
It always does.
But it's not. It really isn't. It's only been a couple of minutes, actually, since we recorded our last one. But we've had another glass of Raki. Yes, which Derek has furnished us with, and it's wonderful stuff, and we're having a lovely time with it. It's still Christmas where we are, listeners, in the past. You'll be listening to this in January, where it's cold and miserable.
It'll be 2018, it's in the future, though.
Oh, I know.
Flying around with their jetpacks and hover cars.
Yes, and Star Trek Discovery would have restarted, of course, by the time you listen to this. Won't it, Graham?
supposedly, yes.
And the Orville started this week, hasn't it?
The Orville started, yes. I haven't...
On Fox, isn't it?
I haven't seen... You've seen the Orville. You've seen a little
I've
bit of the
I've seen the first and second episode.
Yeah, we've not
you
seen... Know.
You mean you sent us the first five episodes without even seeing them?
It's just time, really. You know, there's just so much TV on the moment.
There is too much TV. Way too much TV.
And you've got to live a life as well, so...
You do.
Yes, you do. You've got to live a life.
And watch Star Trek.
Very old episodes of Star Trek.
And record podcasts about them.
Absolutely. Which is what we're doing here.
Yes.
And this is why we're here, listeners. And we're here to talk about Janice Rand, who was a character in eight episodes of the original series, in the early part of the first season of the original series. And when you were watching them for the first time, if you're watching the series for the first time, then really you would have seen Janice as being a major character in the show, I think, for the episodes that she's in, because she's fairly prominent in most of them in some way, shape or form. I will be honest, chaps, I adored Janice Rand when I watched Star Trek in my teens, in the 80s, when I was recording them. I absolutely adored Janice Rand. But in a way that a teenage boy does. Yeah,
not in a sordid way.
Certainly not.
In a bit of a Charlie X way.
In a bit of a Charlie X way.
without
the eyes.
Without the eyes, yes.
unless we caught you unaware.
And without the monstrousness.
and without the hideous monstrousness. I'd like to think, anyway, that I certainly wouldn't have been monstrous towards her. But I thought that she was great. Graham, what's your reflections and memories of Janice Rand as a character? Did you miss her when she went?
Well, yeah, it was when I got back into Star Trek from watching it when I was a very little kid, and she was just another character there in the background. And it was only when I was watching it again in the 80s as someone in my mid to late teens that I recognised she was there from in early episodes and never seen again after that. And when I started looking into it, I got hold of the compendium, started reading it and talking over things with you at the time as well. And it was sort of, she became this character that disappeared. Mm. And she was a character. She wasn't just someone who came on for one episode and then said a few lines and that was it. Mm. She was actually someone who it looked like she was going to be part of it. And I suppose now she's taking on this role of being like the Pete Best of Star Trek. just someone who was there, didn't work out, and then they took the series into a different direction.
Hmm.
Whether or not that direction was a good thing or a bad thing is another thing. But I think it's sad that not necessarily Grace Lee Whitney was got rid of. I mean, I don't know if she was up to it or anything about it. I mean, like she did some really good episodes.
Hmm.
She had a couple of quite forgettable episodes as well. Or troubling episodes.
Yes.
And I think that her not being there perhaps doesn't make Star Trek weaker, but I think it's a shame that there aren't more strong female characters
in
the crew, because you're basically left with Uhura there and the occasional appearance of Nurse Chapel, and that's it. Neither of whom get anything of note really in the remaining series after Janice Rand's gone.
Was she a strong female character, Derek?
I didn't think she was actually particularly strong.
No.
But then again, I mean, going back to when I first saw her in, I was a little kid, so as she was a girl, I didn't really care. You know, at the time, it was later on, obviously, but I do remember. Seeing the original publicity shots that I'd never seen before. You know, there's that famous one where you got Spock, Kirk, and Janice with the flashlight gun. You know,
that's a kind of funky phaser rifle, isn't it?
Yeah, and at the time she hasn't got the beehive as well.
No,
And also she's got a different uniform on.
Yeah,
she's got actually trousers on. The black trousers.
Yeah, she's got cage style uniforms.
And the thing is that which is interesting is I mean, it's of its time. I think she's had a dramatic effect on Star Trek because I was reading up that it was her idea to have a new uniform for the female cast because she wanted to show off her legs.
Right.
Because she was a bit of a dancer at the time. And that's when they redesigned the costumes for the female members of the crew, because beforehand it was a unisex costume.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they wore trousers.
You know, and it would have been more in keeping of what we would expect.
And the tunics were a bit more baggier they were asexual
so
uniforms, weren't they?
You could say that sort of her contribution was actually the start of a sort of the sexism that, you know, that people are saying that they're wearing those really short tunic costumes for the females as well.
Mm.
You know, but that's something I came to later on. I read about she mentions it in her autobiography. So as a strong character, I do have problems with it because she's always with Kirk, and it is a case of she's, you know, there are times when Kirk's putting his arm around her when there are problems, or like in the last episode we were speaking about Charlie X, where she does face up to the adolescent Charlie X in a proper way and tell him to back off and everything. Well, from that side, yes, as a female in the 60s, she does seem to be quite strong. But overall, you know, as a character within Star Trek, I don't think, you know, she seems to be... She's got that secretarial role. She's supposed to be Kirk's...
She's kind of love interest, isn't
she? Yeah, or disapproving missus as well. Yeah. If he gets up to anything nasty,
she's the money penny, isn't she?
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yes, that's
what she's like. But it's the bit in Charlie X when she actually recognises a problem there. Mm. Not with the fact that he's got powers, but recognises the problem with him having an interest in her. And Kirk is almost like dismissing it. And said, well, it's not a problem.
Well, she says she'll just handle it. She had experience of it before.
Yeah. This is a problem, and this has to be dealt with.
I think this is her strongest role, Charlie X.
Yeah.
I think her role in Enemy Within is deeply problematic. That episode is memorable, but also very problematic. And it's very difficult to really know what to make of how good Janice is as a character in that, when the character is placed in this impossible position. In the rest of them, in Miri, she's she's playing, I mean, this is where they're,
she's meant to be the mother, isn't she, really?
Yeah, so she's got this kind of maternal kind of thing going on, but also there's this this tension that she has with Kirk, because, you know, they think they're probably going to die in a very, very horrible way, and her feelings for Kirk are coming to the surface, and I think similarly Kirk is also, you know, having strong feelings, and you wonder whether or not they're getting that close to some kind of breakthrough on the romantic side of the relationship, which is sort of bubbles under. Would you not think? I mean,
the
whole look at my leg scene, for example. I don't know if you remember that from Miri.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing to address in a TV series like Star Trek, where they're going to be showing episodes out of sync. They want to be able to and to have the unresolved sexual tension undercurrent in the plot
and sustain
it as well. I think you've either got to go on that, because they did it in TNG, didn't they? They carried that on with Crusher and Picard for years, didn't they?
Yes, they did, and then they ended up abandoning it, really, yeah, didn't they? Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, in fairness, it did happen in the end, but then it was dropped for the movies. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so it was.
This is a trope in genre TV programs, well-established trope, even in kind of anthology nature. I mean, story arc TV shows are still relatively new, maybe 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back in the 80s, you'd have lots of shows in which there would be the main male character would have an assistant or a friend who was female, and there would be an undercurrent of
an Avengers that. type thing.
Steve and Mrs. Peel is a great example. I mean, Michael Knight and Bonnie, or April and Jake Cutter and Sarah Jane, if you're a fan of Batman and Robin.
Especially. How about Gary Seven and the Terry Garr character?
Exactly.
We've got to look at Terry Garr's role in that. And this is a Gene Roddenberry sort of pilot episode for his new series. And there she is acting often.
Yeah.
And there is a slight visual similarity between Terry Garr and Grace Lee Whitney.
Yes.
And you can see the direction that Gene Roddenberry may have wanted to take the Janice Rand character there, but perhaps wasn't feeling that could have been the direction it should have gone.
On a personal preference, you see, the thing is that I can see, you know, we can see that this was way that the show was developing, but when Janice Rand, Yeoman Rand left, you had a new relationship that was formed, which was the trinity of Kirk, McCoy and Spock, you know, which is a thing that actually made it stronger. So I think that with the relationship with her being there in the early episodes, you didn't have much interaction. You couldn't have interaction between, I mean, even Spock was further away with Kirk. And obviously McCoy was well back, you know, sort of as a relationship with Kirk. Because she was there, you know, that she was more the focus.
Those early episodes were like, I mean, McCoy was an old friend.
Yeah.
Spock was
confidant.
First officer, confidant, not necessarily a friend. But, no. I mean, but yeah, maybe. But and then you had what we were talking about in the last episode. You had Uhura sort of like, you know, maybe even becoming, you know, looking like to have some kind of strong bond.
Well, there'd be a partnership that way.
Yeah, yeah. And the ensemble was kind of taking shape. And then when she left, as you say, the ensemble was broken. And they went to the trio, which is really how we know Star Trek now. You want to say something?
Well, I think it's where we also see the birth of the real unresolved sexual tension in Star Trek.
Yes.
You had to bring that up.
I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it's been there. I mean, people have been talking about it and writing about it, you know, for years. The origin of slash fiction is it originates from Kirk and Spock and
TOS. Would that have been there if Rand
I would say not. I'd say that the show would have gone off in a different direction, yet it would have been more ensemble. I mean, in many ways it would have been great, because we'd have got to see Janice more, we'd have got to see Uhura more, we'd have hoped to see Sulu more. But one of the defining characteristics of Star Trek, the original series, is the trio, Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
So you're saying in a parallel universe, slash fiction wouldn't exist?
Yeah, I'm
saying. Right. Yeah. So that means that as would have further been, down it
would
the
have
line.
Been Kirk slash Rand, which would have been far less fun.
Well, apparently. Well, I don't know.
By Terry
DeFoe. Yeah, my slash as a under consequence. Under my name.
My name.
No, Graham, don't. No, you need to take credit for your own work, Chief. there is a parallel universe where Janice doesn't get, where Grace Lee Whitney doesn't get sacked, and the show goes on. Who knows what happens to the show? It gets cancelled after half a season. Maybe it goes on for seven seasons. Who knows?
But we do see the gradual stripping away of female roles in Star Trek from the beginning, right, the cage, basically midway through the first season, don't we? Because in the cage, you've got a first officer there who's female.
Yeah.
By the time it comes to Where No Man Has Gone Before, she's out. Dr. Dana's in for one episode. Mm. She's a bit weak and ends up being converted into a god. And,
great actress, but
great actress. Hideously underused. Yeah. And then you've got Rand brought in and then taken away used. And I think as well, I'm probably thinking as well, Terry, I think your enjoyment of Grace Lee Whitney's role as Rand has also been coloured well by the City on the Edge of Forever script.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I was going to bring that up, that she's still written in to a number of scripts. So you can see, I mean, there's subsequent episodes in which a yeoman turns up. We've done an episode of Gallifrey 7 where there's a yeoman in there. I'm afraid I can't remember her name, but I'm almost certain that that's supposed to be Yeoman Rand. Dagger the Mime was supposed to be Janice, but they went with Helen Noel instead. And there's Yeoman Mears in Shore Leave, who almost certainly would have been, which is interesting because she ends up having a relationship with McCoy. There's some romance there, so I don't know. And of course Harnison's original script had Janice Rand as an entirely different character, really. I mean, in as to what we understand her as, you know, she's on ship holding the fort, and strong character,
almost like a head of security, almost
right.
From what I understand, actually, is that with the Harlan Ellison script, is that Harlan Ellison did know that Grace Whitney had actually finished with the...
He did, yes. Well, he shouldn't have written it then, should he?
But he wrote it in despite that, because he wanted to keep the character in. He was actually going out with her at the time.
Oh, was he really?
Yes. He was maybe trying to force her back into the thing. And, you know, and I mean, going back to Star Trek itself, I mean, do you feel that Star Trek started up with great ideas about how to treat female characters from the beginning, and it is just watered down as we go along through,
just commercial pressures, isn't it?
Commercial pressures.
Yeah, it's probably like to a degree. It's a network, and it could be from the production side. I mean, you made a point in the last podcast, Del, that the amount of money that gets spent is less when you're employing fewer actors. So if you have only got your three principal actors there, then it does make for a cheaper show.
There are obviously stories of impropriety against Grace Lee Whitney.
Yeah. Yes.
And also she had troubles of her own, external troubles.
But she was getting paid a lot as well for this, because she was getting paid, was it $570? Per episode that she was actually doing it, which was a lot of money at the time.
Right.
And she was above DeForest Kelly in the actual credits sequences.
Yeah,
she was, because essentially, because I mean,
he wasn't in the opening credits.
Yeah, exactly. Too, I mean, Dee Kelly wasn't, McCoy, that character, I don't think was intended to be I think it was more likely to be more like Paul Fix from Where No Man Has Gone Before, you know, I mean, more of a kind of a peripheral. Character, but obviously that's not how the show went, and that's how these kind of shows often go. She had substance abuse issues while during the filming, and I mean, there's people have said, and it's all a matter of opinion, none of it's a matter of fact, but it's been suggested that these were affecting her roles, and that this may have contributed to the reason why it was a good idea to get rid of her. And there are other stories that that they, again, they, Kirk, they wanted Kirk to have more love interests, you know, as part of the stories for future adventures, and that Janis would be a barrier to that. And I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you think of that however you can, or we all got an opinion about what we think about that, but I mean, that's kind of a legitimate reason for doing something like that. It's just all adds up. And of course, yeah, there's these really unpleasant stories about, you know, abuse as well.
I think there's a combination of all of it,
so,
actually.
Yeah, so, I mean, it might well be that, yeah, that there's, you know, that this all added up to the fact that they just felt it was best that they move her on.
Troubling time for her.
Well, it was. I mean, she, by her own admission, she said that she attempted to take her own life after she found the news, and she... it was a very unhappy time for her. Fortunately, she rallied well and recovered well. Although she's no longer with us, she had a good life.
Oh, she went up to 85.
She's sort of... and she helped prisoners with helping people with substance abuse and dealing with problems and in fact that is according to her. To her, one of her sons, that's how she wishes to be remembered, as not as an actress, but as somebody
who... Well, I mean,
one of the sons was actually in a Star Trek episode as well. Well,
which one was it? Was it Mary?
Yes, both of her sons.
Yeah, she was 36.
Yeah.
See, that is the thing, is look at it now, I did think she was quite mature for the age of the character that she looked like she was playing.
Compared to some of the guest stars that were coming
exactly.
in and acting against.
So
the less age appropriate.
But I think
ones,
that's why she was so good, though, is because she was a seasoned experienced actress. I mean, she knew how to act. I mean, and she may not have been Grace Lee Whitney may not have been a stellar actress, but she was certainly a good pro and a good. Probably a good person.
Well, she had
to
a good
around.
Career, didn't she? She had a fairly well established career as a dancer and a songstress, I should say.
Maybe that's one reason why they got rid of her, because they didn't want her to be like the sort of disapproving school mom behind the scenes every time Kirk like shacked up with.
But
it
seemed it was going that way anyway.
Yeah. That's what Rachel Whitney once said that she wanted to happen. She said if she stuck around, that's how it would have been, and she would have actually quite liked that. But
to be the money penny type character.
Exactly, she'd have enjoyed that role, but to what extent that's... And it would have probably had all kinds of cringeworthy sort of like comedic tag scenes at the end, which...
Yeah. You can see she would have had most of her use would have been, as you say, in the epilogue.
But the problem is that she's Kirk's secretary.
Yeah.
And I mean, if she was Kirk's counterpart, it would be a different still. I mean, it's not a Steele and Mrs. Peel situation where they are on an equal footing, and Mrs. Peel is every bit as strong and in some way stronger than Steele. This is not that. I mean, Kirk is Janice's boss, and the whole thing is completely inappropriate. So, I mean, in that respect, it's kind of good that she wasn't. It's lousy what happened to the character, and it's lousy what happened to Grace Lee Whitney, but artistically, I don't think it's that bad if that's the way it was going.
Do you think then when they were doing Next Generation, Tasha Yar was written in as what Janice Rand should have been?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and the answer to that is I don't know, but I like to think so.
Yeah.
Now that you've mentioned
it, I sort of thought that Janice Yan was supposed to be more of an action character, because again, going back to those original publicity shots, she is in there in the action. You don't see what they're shooting at and stuff like that. She doesn't look like, you know, the babe on Kirk's knee. You know what I mean? It does really, you know, like she was going to be a big part of it. But obviously it went a different way, you know. And maybe the case of when she decided to, that she, you know, that costume thing I was going on about, how they she specifically asked for a different costume rather than the you know, the sort of the trousers and the sort of the loose tunic, you know, to be more sort of Hollywood TV and stuff like that, to show herself off. That she changed it as well, changed the whole thing of Star Trek for the way women were supposed to be treated in there. Because I had this lovely idea that maybe women were going to, that they were going to think of them as more as equals, you know, especially with number two in the original pilot and so on, you know, that they were going to go down one route by accident because of her own, Grace Whitney's own idea, but she wanted to show herself off as being a beautiful woman, you know, and that she sort of changed the course of Star Trek as well, and how we saw science fiction from then on, you know, as those sort of characters. Yeah. Superbly mimicked in Galaxy Quest with Sigourney Weaver.
Yes, yes.
As being the sex pots, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, we should do an episode of Galaxy Quest one day, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should do, yeah.
It is the other Star Trek film.
But you know, the thing is that I was reading about Whitney, she was going on about those costumes that she was wearing. They were specifically fitted for her. But the person, one of the people who was actually who made the costumes or in charge of the wardrobe, said that she was looking too fat.
Yeah.
And this contributed to her anorexia.
Yeah.
And she was, she was given amphetamines, which contributed to her addiction.
Yeah, and she was also hitting the booze as well.
Yeah, to bring herself down from it.
Amphetamines were handed out a lot in Hollywood.
Yes, at the time,
she said herself, that she was bloating, and sometimes she'd be out, and then sometimes she'd be in.
So it's that stress rubbish.
It is a parable for the treatment of women in Hollywood in general, particularly in the 1960s, but also, I suspect, to in present day as well. And it's a... sadly, it's a parable of which few people draw any meaningful long-term lessons. I think it's a real tragedy in many ways what happened to Grace Lee Whitney, and it's a shame. And it does give us a glimpse of how Star Trek could have been. Just a quick run through then, for those who don't know, the episode she's in, Corb Might Maneuver, Enemy Within, Man Trap, Naked Time, Charlie X, Balance of Terror, Miri is her last significant one, and in The Conscience of the King, she has a walk-on run where she casts a kind of jealous look at Lenore as she's leaving the bridge. And then she walks off, exits stage right and or her left, and that's it. And we never see her again. And I think that, although I think actually we do, because I think of the way that the running order is. But anyway, that's that. I think that if that little walk-on, walk-off role is kind of a snapshot of where things were likely to go, then you know, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. She turns up in motion pictures, transport operator, and then she's got cameos in Voyage Home and Undiscovered Country. But she makes a full return in Flashback, where she which is a retelling of a part of the Undiscovered Country, in which Janeway and Tuvok go kind of back in time to relive a moment in Tuvok's career, and Janice Rand is in that, and that's that. So I mean, that's her career. Quite an impact, I think, guys, given that a relatively short number of episodes that she's in.
Obviously she was much loved, because at least by G. Rudabu, because I mean, he said that. He offered her the part of Janice Rand again in for Star Trek Phase 2.
Right.
You know, which would have been great. Cool. Yeah. It would have been good if they obviously went Phase 2.
For that. Yeah.
But obviously it didn't, and she ended up with the cameo roles in the movies.
A few people have actually missed out on some fun with Star Trek Phase 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting that there was. Anyway, is there anything else you want to say about Janice Rand? Do you think we've dealt with that topic?
That character? Well, I'm sure that we could probably speak a lot of things about sort of, you know the way she had been treated.
And,
but also she, which is something that we should mention, that she did have a lot of fondness for the fandom, and she got back into the sort of the convention scene, obviously at the beginning of
when she died, the following convention, there was a big tribute to her. I was at that convention, and there was a Vegas, I should say, and there was a big tribute to her, and it was well attended. I mean, the room, the big main hall there, it's 4,000 people, so you know, and it wasn't full, but I mean, there was loads of people in there for that.
Oh, goodness.
And it's clear that and a lot of it is because if you do the convention circuit, then the fans, you get that bond with the fans, and then the character lives on a lot longer in the way Star Trek, more than other shows. And it was very touching. I mean, and even for a grizzled, cynical Brit like me, it was touching, and it was sincere. And it was very nice. So I mean, she fortunately she has a legacy, and so
I think it's it's something that fans can hold on to, because I think they can look, even though if you love a TV series like Star Trek, you can look at something like this and think, well, these are decisions made by non-creative people for what they think will make a better show. And it allows people like us to look and say, well, actually, maybe it could have even been even better
if you'd
been a bit braver. Because you can see that where Star Trek has been brave before, it's been good.
Yeah.
And it's turned out for the best. And it's what sets the program apart from everything else. And so I think that's what Janice Rand almost could have done.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And on that, I think we'll leave it. Thank you for listening to Whom Pods Destroy. We hope you enjoyed our discussion about Janice Rand. If you have anything to add or feel we've missed something, then don't hesitate to get in touch. The best way to contact us is on Twitter at Whom Pods Destroy. Or if Twitter's not your thing, then get in touch via email. Yes, email at garth@whompodsdestroy.com. Next time, we'll be moving away from the first season and taking in one of the standout episodes from the third season in more ways than one. Yes, dear listener, join us next time as we take the way to Eden.
Yeah, brother.
Brother, yeah. So, until then, from me, Terry DeFallon, and from Graham Sibley, and from Derek Mantle, it's goodbye.